everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Warring to Attitude. This is the 55th edition. After taking 1 week off, we have returned with our WrestleMania hangover. I am your host, Brent Piles, and with me, as always, is a man who is from the future and across the ocean. He is the ballroom brawling disco dancing dynamite stretching intercontinental playboy. Folks, he may be over, but he's not as over as the Arsenal Football Club is at my house. He is at J.A. Russell at Glen Abbey. Glenn, how are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I just said off air, I feel like I've come out of a cave. Just been sitting in front of my TV for 2 days. Day and noon and morning, noon and...
Just watching wrestling.
But it was worth... And football, of course.
Yes, and football. Yeah, can't forget that.
But it was worth... Yeah, it was definitely worth it. The whole thing, the whole shebang was definitely worth it. Arsenal getting a good win. Liverpool only drawing with Manchester United.
But still, those Manchester United motherfuckers, they can't even win a game when somebody tries to give it to them.
No. Well, that's what you get with a mid-table team.
That's why they're mid-table.
It's not. That's why they're not near the top.
You know what, Glenn? You're right. They are a mid-table team. But hey, we thank you for pulling a draw with Liverpool because it kept us top of the table for at least 1 week.
Yep.
And we got the big Champions League match tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Against Bayern Munich.
Yep. The good thing is now is that basically it's anybody's to win or lose now. It's not a case of say Manchester City, I've got like 3 games in hand or anything, and all they need to do is put a run of wins together. So as we keep pace with their points and Liverpool's points, then we win the league.
Right. It's a pretty close 3-team race. I mean, anything can happen, and I'm sure there will be many anxious moments.
Yeah, it probably will as well.
There will be many, many anxious moments, I am sure.
We've got the shits away from home, which is never a good prospect.
Yeah, that's one of those ones where you look at and you're like, if we can just pull out a draw on that one, I'll be.
No, you never want it. Need 3 points there.
We need 3 points in every match, but yeah. I don't.
Is that the pup just coming?
That's him right there.
How's he doing? How's he doing now? Is he all right?
He's getting better. He's still a puppy, and he has his moments. He tried to run away this weekend I had to fucking chase him down the street. But
and that's probably what happened to him the first time.
That's what I told his ass. I said, that's how you ended up running down the goddamn highway in the first place. Full disclosure here, people. If you don't know, I have a new puppy now because my wife was on her way to a funeral and saw a dog running down the highway, and now, boom, I have a new dog. I don't know how old he is. I don't know what kind of dog he is because, like I said, I found him on the highway. My wife did.
Need to get him to a vet.
Yeah, I do. But anyway, so...
Turn you back for a second. They're up to something.
Yeah, you can't. He's coming back right out here. Yeah, so, I think that's about all the football we need to talk about. So we're probably going to talk more about WrestleMania with the mayor on Friday night, but...
We've got to talk about it.
What do you want to talk about?
I am bursting to talk about it.
Say something, Glenn. I know you're bursting.
What a weekend that was. Absolutely amazing. I know you haven't seen all of NXT yet, but NXT kicked it off sadly at the same time that the Arsenal were playing, so I didn't see it till Sunday either.
Yeah.
Saturday night, I thought that's not a bad WrestleMania first night.
Yeah, not the greatest show ever, but not pretty solid, I would say.
But then night two happened.
Yeah.
And that was something else.
Yeah, they really knocked it out of the park.
All the stories came together. Titles changed hands left, right, and center. It was an amazing show.
I mean, right from the get-go, I mean, the first match was good and hard-hitting. You had some twists and turns in there. You know, Drew wins the title, but then Damian Priest, 385-year reign as Mr. Money in the Bank is finally coming to an end. It's so funny. I don't remember where it was. It was probably on night one because they wrestled night one, right? My sister goes, he's still Money in the Bank? I said, yeah, he's still got it.
He's still got it. He has it for a whole year, so he's waited right through till WrestleMania.
Hey, leave it.
No. To cash it in. But again, it was the perfect time to do it.
Yeah, I have no issue. And it furthers the story of Drew and CM Punk going forward. So
yeah, and also the fact that Drew's going to win that back. They're going to put right the egregious wrong that was done to him in Cardiff when he should have beaten Roman.
Well, they're going to be in Scotland this time.
Yeah, there is Scotland.
Oh, so that makes the most sense for him to win it there. Yeah, no, that makes that. That'd be fucking great for him.
Yeah. I think that's what they've done. They give him that WrestleMania moment of winning it. They'd take it off him again to put it back on him again at Clash at the Castle.
Yeah. And they had to get that fucking briefcase on Damian Priest. And at least now Damian Priest's Money in the Bank reign will actually mean something other than a bunch of failed cash-ins, because he did it at WrestleMania.
Yeah,
and that hasn't happened a lot of times at WrestleMania. So, and I love the EO and Bayley match. I thought that was I thought that was the best. I thought it was better than Rhea versus Becky. Not that I thought Rhea versus Becky was bad, because I didn't, but I just love the EO. I love the part where EO did like the counter move on Bayley's, you know, the finishing move where she like dragged her head down, and then EO kind of flipped out of it. I thought that was really fucking well done. And I just love that story being told there. I know a lot of people, maybe not, that wasn't like the top thing that they were looking at going to WrestleMania, but it was up there for me. So, and their match really delivered. So, and the crowd was really, really behind Bayley, and I thought that was super fucking cool.
They were singing their hearts out for Bayley there.
Yeah, I told my sisters, I had to tell my sister what they were saying, and I was like, they usually only do that in England.
Yeah.
It's usually only your lot that are doing that.
It was probably a load of bloody Brits that had gone over.
Right, I was going to say, yeah, there's probably a contingent of Brits that started it, yeah. Yeah, and then, I mean, the main event of night two, not to say the tag team match was, the tag team match was really good too at night one, but it was just really well done, and I like that we got a full wrestling match built within all the shenanigans. They didn't bring the shenanigans until the very end, and I was afraid that it was going to be, you know, shenanigans, 10 minutes of wrestling, more shenanigans, 10 minutes of wrestling, and I'm glad they did it the way they did it. Although I don't like people's music being hit, but I guess that's why you have to do it, because it's WrestleMania.
Yeah, and it made sense of why there was so much shenanigans on night one.
Yeah.
All the shenanigans were got out of the way in night one. And then they had the surprise people coming in to stop the shenanigans in night two, which was brilliant.
Yeah, and it was people that you didn't expect. Like, I didn't expect John Cena to show up.
No,
I didn't fucking expect The Undertaker to show up, you know?
The fact that John Cena had been to the barbers, I don't think he expected to turn up.
No, probably not. No, probably. Probably not. But yeah, I thought it was really well done. And then the way you said, they used The Undertaker perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah. I know for a fact from a source that I'm not at liberty to know.
Yeah, please don't.
His missus actually said to him, "If I catch you doing any bumps in the ring again, I will personally kill you."
Well, there you go. No bumps taken.
No bumps taken. Just a choke slam, and that was it.
Yeah, too. And then
he kept to his word.
And then, like, the ending of it where he's got Seth in the ring, and he's got Cody in the ring, and he's holding the chair. And because Roman hates Seth so much, and he hates the Shield so much, he has to hit Seth with that chair before he hits Cody, and that's what cost him.
That was a brilliant bit of storytelling that goes back a bit.
Yeah.
Because when Seth first got together with Cody, Seth promised him that he would always be his Shield. He turns up in the Shield gear with the music. Roman gets totally confused, batters the lie out of Seth. Cody gets the win. You're perfect.
Yeah, and at first I was worried because I thought maybe Seth was going to turn on Cody and Roman was going to win again. And I was like, please, God. And it's been a long time since I watched a wrestling match and got like a feeling of the same kind of anxiety feeling that I get when I watch a sporting contest. You know what I mean? Like, I got the butterflies in my stomach, my heart's racing. And I know that's that point. That's why you love wrestling, because you know it's bullshit, Yeah. But you're so locked into the story that your body doesn't understand that it's bullshit because you're so invested into it that my heart's beating and I'm sweating. And I've never been a giant Cody Rhodes fan. He's not my favorite wrestler. I wouldn't put him in my top five. But when you get that kind of story built into everything, I mean, you got to give the man props. He did what he always dreamt of doing, and he did it at WrestleMania. So
the story that they're told all the way through to WrestleMania, you know, from day one of the Bloodline, the stories they've been telling.
Yep.
Roman, the Usos, Solo, the whole lot, even Sammy, deserve absolute 100% props for the stories that they've been telling over the last 2 years.
Yeah. Yep. It's all coming to a point. And it's that thing where we always talk about where wrestling fans need to let things breathe. I know we let this breathe for a whole year, but isn't it that much sweeter that you got it now?
Yeah, you know, we're at the fact now, we've got Sammy is Intercontinental Champion. Cody is Universal Champion. You know, both of them have been against the Bloodline at one point or another.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to put it. It was just so... So well, it was so well put together and so well executed. It was as near to perfection as you could get from a wrestling show.
Yeah, it was one of those things where people say it's predictable, but yeah, you know, that's a roller coaster of emotions right there, you know?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
And we knew that Cody was going to win, but it didn't matter on the night. I wasn't sure.
I certainly was. Yeah, no, I certainly wasn't sure. I was like, I don't know. I was mostly worried that if he didn't win, it would be just a crybaby fest everywhere. And quite honestly, I don't think that would have been the right move for him to win. It was time for it to move in another direction. So.
Yeah. And now we've got the story. Where did the Bloodline go?
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, who's going to be Cody's first challenger? And it's going to be interesting to see what happens from here on out. You know,
I hope it's not Walter. I hope they say that for next wrestle.
I wouldn't tell you. We'll see. So basically both of the world champions are on Raw. So Cody's going to have to go to SmackDown now, I assume. So he won't be on Raw anymore. And Gunther's on Raw. So, but I guess there should be a draft coming up soon. Don't they do when you sort shortly after WrestleMania?
They normally do. And especially seeing as they've reset so much stuff.
Yeah.
Because it finished nice and early last night, a lot earlier than I thought it was going to, I actually listened to the press conference after. And I recommend people, if you haven't, to go and listen to that. For not only what Cody said, Damien, and also what Triple H said.
I did not see any of that.
he basically said there's a lot of talk about whose era is it. This new era, whose era it is. And he said, basically, it's your era. We're going to listen to you. And as long as we'll listen to you as long as you listen to us, sort of thing.
Right. I get it.
Paul Heyman at his Hall of Fame speech, he definitely laid to rest the ghost of Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
Yeah. And I think that Stephanie coming out there at the beginning and saying what she said was, I think, a little bit of sticking it to her father as well.
It seemed like how Triple H, well, now I suppose I have to call him Paul in this case. Cause
yeah.
What Paul was saying was he basically had to force her to do it.
Oh, really?
He said it was something she needed and something she wanted to do, but was frightened to do it. So he sort of pushed her out there, I think.
Okay. Well, maybe it's just a situation where he knew she just needed to rip that Band-Aid off. You know what I mean?
I think so as well. You know, the stigma of the McMahon name.
Right. And like, I obviously don't know shit and I really can't, like, I don't know. But to me, Stephanie McMahon genuinely seems like a good person. Like, from everything that I've seen from her, she genuinely seems like a good person. And I never felt that way about her father.
All the girls that I know that have worked with her say what a nice...
I'm sure there's times where she's not nice to people, but that's just, that comes with the territory, so...
That has to be the boss.
Yeah, but I think genuinely she's a good person. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I think core, she's a good person. Calling her Stephanie McMahon and call her Stephanie the best.
Right.
Because that's who she is now. I would, you know, there's no more. There's no more McMahon's anything to do with WWE anymore.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. But yeah, a very good WrestleMania 40. But Glenn, it's time to talk about something that wasn't very good, and that is Monday Night Raw from February 3rd, 1997, at the Hershey Park Arena in Hershey Park, Pennsylvania. It was built in 1936, Glenn. It looks more like a barn than an arena if you saw a picture of it. It's not.
Yeah, indeed, yes.
It looks like a barn. It had a, it hosted WWF Saturday Night's main event, the very third one, which was a tag team match where Hulk Hogan teamed with Andre the Giant to face Big John Studd and King Kong Bundy. The building is currently, it is actually still currently in use. I'm shocked. It's used for NCAA Division III hockey.
Right. So
if you're interested in going down and seeing a Division III hockey game, check out Hershey Park Arena in Hershey Park, Pennsylvania. But yeah, this is the go-home show for the Survivor Series. And Glenn knows as well as I know, and you'll know if you've listened to every episode of this show, that go-home shows suck.
Yeah, they certainly do. This was in a barn, and it was a barn full of horseshit.
Yeah. You're absolutely correct about that one, Glenn. Opens the show with Stone Cold Steve Austin makes his way out of the ring. He better look out. That's what I'm thinking, Glenn. I'm busy walking. Better look out because Ahmed Johnson's looking to score in his zone today. So he better watch his back.
First of all, we get Jim Ross and Jim Cornette on commentary.
Yeah, I don't know if they were trying to do like the same thing WCW was doing, because WCW at that time would have like two separate announced teams. Like, I think Larry Zbysko and somebody would do the first hour, and then somebody else would do the second hour. So I don't know if that's what they were going for, but I don't really like. I like Jim Cornette. Whatever, I know it's controversial sometimes, and I don't always agree with what he says. But there's a lot of people who I don't always agree with what they say. But I don't think he's a good commentator. For me, no, it doesn't work.
He's not a commentator. He's a manager. And it's just they're using him wrong. With those vignettes, having a pop at WCW, they're just using him wrong.
Yeah, maybe they just don't have anything else for him to do. Well, maybe they just needed somebody to do the first hour. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think that's it as well.
Because this is the time where Vince is... I mean, we're not going to see Vince on commentary anymore come Sunday. So, not this Sunday, but when we watch Survivor Series. So,
yeah,
this might be... I think this is his last show on commentary. We'll never have to listen to it. And then from there, ever again. We'll never have to hear that again, Glenn.
Oh, that thing. And it's... no, it's not.
One, two, and he got it. Yeah, no, it didn't. No, it didn't. Yeah, that one there. So, Stone Cold's got the big match, of course, with Owen Hart at Survivor Series. His first match back since he got dropped on his head. He says the match at Survivor Series isn't about the Intercontinental Championship. It's about payback, and payback is a bitch. Vincent reminds Austin of all the people he's angered recently. He says he doesn't he did what he had to do to keep the Intercontinental Championship on Owen Hart, and he apologized. He said, "I'm sorry, Ahmed Johnson. You and I will never be friends. I don't have anything against you, but whenever I stick my head into your match or if your head's in my match, I'm going to whip your ass, and that's just the way it is." which then brings Ahmed out to Austin's zone.
Yeah. He never ever does things by a half, does he? He's now got the whole of the Hart Foundation, the whole of the nation after him, and now Ahmed Johnson as well.
The whole squad. Yeah, he's got like 12 people trying to fight him.
Yeah.
And he's not going to make any more friends going forward, from what I remember.
No, that's right.
Ahmed Johnson challenges Stone Cold to a match that night. Austin, you know, so if anybody wants to see Austin, you know, Ahmed Johnson get his ass whooped, let me hear you say hell yeah. Of course, everybody says hell yeah. And so that match is going to happen tonight, apparently. They also tell us we're going to get a dog collar match between the British Bulldog and Vader. I know that sounds exciting. Stay tuned. It isn't. And then finally, Glenn, the light heavyweight tournament. It begins tonight. Oh,
yes. The other thing is it starts. They show Ahmed Johnson getting the stunners, and Steve Austin is providing sound effects. Wham! Wham!
Very nice of him. It's like Batman. All they needed was the wham words on there.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if that's where they got the original kick wham stunner came from.
It could be. It could very well be. He made it up himself.
Hello, doggy. Yeah. What are you calling him anyway?
His name is Spark.
Oh, Spark. Okay.
And so my son wanted to call him Spark, and he said, well, I'll call him Spark Plug a lot. And then he said, then I told everybody, well, his full name will be Thurman Sparky Plug then.
Yeah, that's right.
So he's little Thurman Sparky Plug. Sparky Plug. Yeah. So, yeah, Sunny then makes her way down to the ring. She's going to be the special guest commentator for this match. It's Super Loco. You people out there might know him as Super Crazy from his days in the WWE and in ECW. He's taking on Aguilar. Do you remember anything about Aguilar, Billy?
The thing I couldn't get over was that Super Loco beat Super Loco by wearing what looked like a mankini over a onesie.
Yeah, you know what? I hadn't thought of that, but you're right. That is what that looked like. This wasn't the best light heavyweight match we've seen.
There were some right botches in this one.
Yeah, there were definitely some dodgy spots. There was one point where he like put him on the top rope, and then he tried to do like a spin kick off the top rope, missed him off the middle rope, and he completely fucking missed it. Like he didn't even. I don't even know what he was doing. Like, he just, I don't, I'm at a loss. I don't know.
No, I don't think they knew.
But I think they did say that the Aguilar kid was like 18 years old or something like that. So,
yeah, greener than green.
It got a little bit better toward the end when they did a lot of, you know, high flying aerial maneuvers. Aguilar eventually got the win, and I shit you not, he literally won this match with the same move that Jey Uso used to beat Jimmy.
Yeah.
The same one. Top rope jump. He went over him and landed on top of him. Exactly the same move that Jey used to beat Jimmy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was all right, this. If you ignore the fact that Brian Christopher on the commentary.
Oh, God, his laugh. Oh, God. Oh, his father was bad. No respect for that. No disrespect because I know he's passed away, but fuck, man. He is not good on the commentary. I was missing Snoop Dogg from WrestleMania 40.
Yeah. That guy brought a whole new meaning to laid back, didn't he?
Whatever he's got, I want some because that shit works. You could have fucking Snoop Dogg give a fuck about nothing at that point. Like, he probably doesn't ever. He's rich, so why would he?
Yeah.
And then from that we go.
Last note from that is for a random Raw match in 1997. Those two guys were really trying to get themselves over with some of the stuff they were doing.
Yeah, but then they ended up making themselves look like idiots because they missed half the spots. Yeah, they were seriously going about 100 miles an hour as soon as the bell rang. It was like somebody shot them out of a cannon. And I'm sure somebody in the back told them, hey, kids, you need to slow that shit down.
Yeah, that's it.
Because, like, I know they do that, you know, with the cruiserweights and WCW too, but, like, there was, like, a flow to it. This was just a mess.
It was a mess.
Yeah. We then get a shitty... Yeah, we get a pretty shitty Gold Dust here doing a shocking interview with Marlene. I didn't mean to say that, but I said it.
It's just true. You might as well tell it as it is.
Yeah. So let's just listen to some of it because it's definitely.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know if any two folks have been challenged any more, both professionally and personally, in the last 60 days than Gold Dust and Marlena.
It's very hard. I think the hardest part was just being away from my two most important people, my daughter, whom I cherish, and my husband, who is my everything.
You know, for so long, I've lived for my father. I've lived for you. Look at me. Please.
I understand that.
Well, the 7 years I've known you, I've been like a little puppy dog. Every time I do something wrong, I don't do something to your liking, you scorn me. You discipline me. I'm sick of it. You won't let me be myself. You don't even know who I am. You have no idea. You know nothing about my life. You want to think you do. You want to believe that you do. But you know nothing about me, and I'm sick and tired of it. Look at me, damn it. You know, do you think that I was at home for a month while you were away? God knows what you were doing. You think I was sitting at home playing Mr. Mom? Being a good little husband and a good little dad? That's bullshit. You know, I was reaching. And I reached out and I found something. Something that did understand me. To let me express myself, to let me be who I want to be. Because you sure as hell hadn't done it. Look at me. Can you not look at me in the face, in my eyes, when I'm talking to you? I wasn't at home sitting there for a month. I watched you occasionally, and I was wondering what the hell you could have been doing. What? But you know what? You know what? I found somebody. I found somebody. Somebody who knows me now, who understands my insides, who wants to believe in me and let me do whatever the hell I want to do.
What are you talking about? What are you talking about?
For a long, long time now, Terry, I haven't loved you. I do not love you. I'm sick and tired of it.
Why are you doing this here and now? Why?
Right now, I'm starting my life over, and I'm doing for me. So you can take this ring, you can take this marriage, and you can take Marlena, and you can shove it up your ass. I've had it up to here with you and your
Yeah, so I assume that the reason why they're doing this now is because, like, the whole plan for the Marlena Pillman thing was that Marlena was going to end up turning on Goldust and going with Pillman.
Yeah.
And so now they had to figure out something else to do. And now they've done where Goldust has turned on Marlena. I just think they went a little further than they needed to.
Well, this is this stinks of Vince Russo, even though I don't think he's here at this time.
I want to say 97, he is at least part of the booking.
So his fingerprints are all over this crap then.
Committee. I know a man who, as soon as he hears this episode, he's going to let us know, because we can always count on Rob. Rob, let us know if he's on the booking committee at this point. I want to say he is. I think it might be him and Jim Cornette doing it, which I would have loved to listen to a couple of those conversations. We like to fly on the wall for that. Bro, motherfucker! Just like all day.
It still doesn't justify this.
Yeah. And so we're going to get some really interesting stuff from Goldust going forward now. Mm-hmm. So be on the lookout for that. They do a whole video package that goes over the long, drawn-out history of Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart. Goes all the way back to WrestleMania 12 and, you know, everything from then on there. It's been covered to death by everyone, and we've talked about it a lot, and we'll talk about it a lot next week even further. So I don't know if there's anything more that we can say about it. It's just basically a visit. If you go back and listen to the last five episodes, you'll get everything.
just so, you know, even going back to Brent's reference to what happened to Shawn, where he said, what is it? I've got the note here. Oh, getting beaten up by 9 cheerleaders in Syracuse. Being a walk in the park.
Yeah. Yeah, but the one thing that I thought was good at the end was that JR was like, oh, this match is 1 year in the making, and we may never see it happen again.
Thank God. And yes, he was right.
Boy, was that some foreshadowing there by old JR, huh? Ahmed Johnson then can't wait, because he makes his way down to the ring for his match with Stone Cold Steve Austin, but bad news, Kane's here.
Yeah. It did seem like anybody actually knew that Ahmed Johnson was coming out at that point.
Well, he certainly sold it that way.
Yeah, it looked like it sounded more like that he was doing it, got it the business for himself at that point. You know, he was saying, what's he doing here? We're not expecting him yet. And so it was crazy.
Yeah. Kane and Paul Bearer make their way down. Johnson lands a few punches, but it doesn't matter. Kane gives him a choke slam, two choke slams, two tombstones, picks him up for another tombstone, But then somebody, a masked man, showed up, didn't he, Len?
I haven't got a note on that.
Well, Mankind comes down.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a big, I don't know what that was. I think that might be the thing they used to tighten the turnbuckles.
Oh, that thing, yeah.
I think that's what it was. I'm not 100%.
It was. It had something to do with the turnbuckles anyway. And it looked big and heavy.
It really did, yeah. It looked very big and heavy. He gets in the ring. He gives Paul Bearer the mandible claw, and then he clocks Kane right in the head with this weapon, and it, like, bends this big-ass thing. It, like, bends it in, so you think this is really going to hurt this guy. Nope. Sets right up. Doesn't even matter.
What annoyed me about this little segment, though, is that they didn't turn the lights up until afterwards, and you actually saw this bloody rod thing. The whole time, the whole thing was shot in red.
You're gonna hate the Mankind Kane match at Survivor Series then.
God.
Do you remember when Sin Cara first came in and they would wrestle in that fucking blue hint?
Oh yes.
That's what that match is like.
It's gonna be a red match. Okay.
I don't know why, because they keep, but I don't know. They for some reason think they need to keep the lights down when Kane wrestles. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
The bright lights hurt his skin, Glenn. I would not be surprised if that's not the way it's sold at Survivor Series. I hope I'm right. I don't think it is, but I would not be surprised.
No.
Austin's music hits then. He's back down into the ring. He says if he can't whoop Ahmed Johnson's ass, he's got to whoop somebody's ass. So he asks for somebody to come down here. Nobody comes out. He said somebody's got to have some guts. Somebody come out. Nobody comes out. He asks for a beer and a hot dog. Yeah. Finally, the Nation of Domination makes their way down to the ring.
This is
definitely like some time filler. So they start making their way down to the ring. Kama gets in there like he's going to fight him. And then just as he gets in the ring, LOD comes from out of nowhere. They start fighting with the Nation.
Yeah.
Kama turns around, gets stunned, often leaves the ring laughing at everybody.
None of these people are actually on the card. They've got no reason to be in the building.
At this point, we have watched one match in this whole fucking show.
I know. Yeah, and I've got that. I've got a little note here. For those keeping track, we've just had the grand total of one match in the entire first hour of Raw.
Yep. and then we're not going to get the last segment of the first hour ain't a match either. It is a very long. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is the start of the second hour. I'm sorry. So, yeah, we got one match the entire first hour. The show restart, and then Mike Cole's in the ring. He tries to introduce Shawn Michaels, but then, you know, Rick Rude comes out and says, what I'd like to have right now is for all you Pennsylvania pissants to keep the noise down.
Mm-hmm.
And he brings out Shawn. This segment felt like it went on forever.
It, yeah. And poor old Michael Cole. And he's still there now doing the best work he's probably ever done.
One of my favorite things from last night was at the very end, he goes, God, I love pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, Michael Cole.
Yeah. And the fact that back in 1997, you put up with this shit, and you really must love it.
Yeah, they get him, like Triple H pretends like he's going to apologize to him, and then they do the whole thing you did to somebody in elementary school where somebody gets down on all fours behind him and you shove him over. I'm sad to say I participated in that. I'm sorry if you're out there listening. You're not. So, yeah, they're messing with Michael Cole. They talk about the Ken Shamrock situation instead of – it was funny because Cole asked him about the Ken Shamrock thing. He didn't answer his question. He just kissed Triple H and then kissed China.
Yeah.
Instead of answering him. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. There wasn't a whole lot into this. They start making fun of Hulk Hogan. My biggest takeaway was I saw a sign in the crowd that said WCW wheelchair wrestling, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah.
Thought that was pretty funny. Shawn Michaels says he's going to come out naked on Raw next week.
Yeah, if he wins.
Tune in. So he says he's going to do this so he can show Ken Shamrock the real most dangerous man.
Yeah. Yeah, he apparently wants to show his genitals off to Ken Shamrock.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I'm not going to comment or speculate on why they're dangerous. But Sergeant Slaughter comes down then after they call him out because they want him to make the match official. He starts talking. They get these big fucking helmet things that got windshield wipers on them because he always spits when he talks. And he tells them, you know, you won't wrestle Shamrock next week. You're going to wrestle them tonight.
The thing with this is, unfortunately, back the first time around with this, we all thought it was hilarious. Looking back on it now as a grown-ass adult, it's not.
It was a little bit funny, but it wasn't as funny as I thought it was when I was 14.
No, exactly.
No, but a lot of things. The movie, I watched the movie starring Tom Green. Do you know Tom Green?
Yes, I do.
Not Tom Green not WCW Deep Cuts Tom Green. Not that Tom Green, a different Tom Green.
Yeah.
The movie Freddy Got Fingered.
Yeah.
When I was 15, 16, 17, I thought that movie was hilarious. If I watched that movie now, I would think it was the dumbest fucking movie I've ever seen in my life. So that's for some context there. Yeah. I had bad taste when I was 14.
And so I thought
Daddy was cool, and look where that got me.
And so were a lot of people. So when you're a 40-odd-year-old man, going, the Attitude Era was better than anything they're doing now. Shut the fuck up.
Not everything was as great. Not as everything was as great.
It was all right when you were 12 or 14.
Yeah.
But now.
Now it just seems like nonsense. Yeah.
You ask a 12 or 14-year-old now who was there last night cheering at Cody winning the title. What's the best thing since sliced bread? They'd say wrestling now.
I mean, you might ask some adults who might agree with that.
Yeah, I'm one of them.
we're living in a good era, that's for sure. Then finally, what we've all been waiting for since the first hour, we finally get our second match of the evening, Glenn, and it's Savio Vega versus Mark.
Best part about this is the beginning, where Mark Mero dragged out Sable half dressed.
Yep. I mean,
he's trying to act like this puritanical tyrant that's not going to let her do anything. And yet he grabs hold of her when she's got her bits flying around still.
Yeah, that doesn't really go along with his character. He doesn't want anybody talking to her, but he'll pull her out there with her boobs out. That doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense at all. But it didn't do her any harm. Because he set her up for the rest of her career.
Well, yeah, I guess not.
Vince went, God damn it, man. And that was it. It was.
Yeah.
Mark Mero went down and her trajectory went up.
That's the way it went down, yeah. I don't know. I guess it was the best match in the card so far.
Yeah. And I've got four lines on it.
Go ahead, give them to
me. It was Mark Mero goes low and finishes with a TKO at 2:30.
Which is the same way Mark Mero ended his match last week and the week before that. I have the exact same thing, Glenn. The exact same thing I wrote here. Michael Cole wants to interview Sable. She says, oh, how do you feel about him winning his matches? But also, how do you feel about him using these low blows? She says he's happy about him winning the matches, but it sounds like she's about to say she doesn't like the low blows. But then Mark Mero interrupts her and says, this interview's over. If you want to talk to a superstar next week, you can talk to me. he's very confused on what a superstar is.
Yeah.
And that was the end of that. And then we get what I thought was going to be a lot of fun, Glenn, to be honest with you. I was like, oh, this should be a really cool match. Dog collar match between Vader and the British Bulldog. Apparently they are co-captains of the 4-on-4 Survivor Series match, which is pitting the USA versus Canada. This USA team has Goldust, who is leaving his wife and hates her. We've also got the Patriot, who's not going to be there because he's injured.
Ken Shamrock and
Vader. So, and then for some reason, Doug Furness, who is from like fucking Tennessee or something. Phil LaFon, who is Canadian, so that's fine. And they're going to join the Bulldog and the Anvil for this type. Even though we haven't seen Furness and LaFon on TV in months, now all of a sudden they're in this.
That really got JR worked up as well, didn't it? He was beside himself with Doug Furness.
Yeah, but JR was certainly not happy with that, was he? I don't know, Glenn. What do you think about this dog collar?
I did. I in this in the thing of the show. I can't even think what the word is. My brain's gone.
Oh, like the synopsis?
Yeah, the show. This wasn't a bad match. This was probably the best match on the show, which is sad to say.
Well, I would say the last match might be a little better.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good spots in this.
Yeah, they did, but the thing is, it was like 4 minutes, and they barely really, besides like the two good spots, they really didn't do a whole. There wasn't a whole lot of anything going on.
No, but with a dog collar match, you need to be doing that at a pay per view. You don't need to be doing it on a 4 minute match on Raw. And why is it only 4 minutes? They could have given them 10 minutes.
Yeah.
On this show with no wrestling, they could have given it 10 minutes easy.
And that's like a dog collar match is something you do for like a blow off feud. I don't think the Bulldog can get it really wrapped up in a blood feud at this moment. I know like him and the Patriot have been fighting with the Hart Foundation, but it hasn't been like singularly Davey versus. It didn't make a whole lot of sense. I did like the part really they had Vader like hung over the top rope and the other guys are like beating on him because Vader's got no help out here because all his guys are gone. Shamrock's, I don't know what Shamrock was doing. He's getting ready for his match with Shawn Michaels. Goldust is banging his new girlfriend that he found when Marlena was with Brian Pillman, apparently. Spoiler alert, it's Lita Vachon. And they basically just beat Vader up.
That's no disrespect to the late Luna, but that's not exactly a step up, is it?
Well, I guess it depends on what boat you're rocking. I don't know. To each his own, as I always say.
I suppose, yeah. There's someone for everyone, as Kenny Rogers used to sing.
So, yeah, I don't know. You had to touch all four turnbuckles to win this match. That's how you won this dog collar match, which is most of them, but sometimes they do weird rules, you know what I mean?
Yeah, this was a traditional one, but I totally lost track of who was touching what turnbuckles.
Yeah, there was only like three attempts, because like I said, this match went 4 minutes. Like, and when Vader won it, even the commentary team was confused. They were like, is that three or is that four?
And no, it's four. Referee thinks it's four.
Yeah, so then after that, like, all the guys get in the ring, they start beating him up, and then some guy comes out of nowhere, they say it's a fan,
yeah, he starts,
like, kicking people and shit, and then I didn't understand the Vader thing. Like, why did he take him down and hug him?
I don't know. I really don't know. I thought, first of all, he was going to beat him up himself, but then he's all protecting him.
Yeah, it was just really weird. Because, like, at first it's like you think it is an actual fan, but then, like, if it was an actual fan, he wouldn't take him down and then cover him up so the other guys couldn't beat him up. You know what I mean? That's not what they would do.
I'm wondering if nobody was actually – the only person that actually knew that was Steve Blackman. Sorry to spoil her. was Vader.
Yeah.
And there was boots going in there. Vader thought, I better save this guy from getting a real kick in.
I guess. I don't know what I don't remember. Maybe Leon forgot what he was supposed to do. I'm not sure. But yeah, this is one, the Lethal Weapon Steve Blackman. And if you're an Attitude Era wrestling fan, you'll know who the Lethal Weapon Steve Blackman is. But I completely forgot that this was his debut.
He should have been around a lot earlier than that. Apparently, he was due to be signed by WWF back in 1989, but went on a world tour or something, doing either martial arts or whatever, ended up with malaria and was laid up for years.
Oh, goddamn. I didn't even know that. Interesting. Interesting. So interesting to see. I think he's on. I'm pretty sure he replaces the Patriot as the fourth member of that USA team. So the next thing is the New Age Outlaws taking on the Los Boricuas. If you remember last week, they cost the Los Boricuas a match with the Legion of Doom. They still have the Blackjack's hats that they had last week that they ripped apart, which is really
hilarious. They're wearing them around the necks.
Yeah, it was really funny. I don't know. This match, I mean, it's cool to watch the New Age Outlaws come into their own, but they've never been known as having been technical masters in the ring, and they're not exactly working with I don't know what. I'm not trying to like say bad things about the Los Boricuas, because those guys can work fine, but there's nothing to this match, and I'm not going to care about it. And it was 2 minutes long. But good to see the New Age Outlaws.
Yes. Yeah. Although, yeah, that's what they were missing at this time.
Oh, big time. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the New Age Outlaws get the win when badass Billy Gunn comes off the top rope on one of the Los Pericos while he's pinning Road Dogg, and the referee's not looking, and then Road Dogg rolls him over and pins him. Another lackluster match from another lackluster Monday night.
Yeah.
And then we go to the main event of the evening, and it is Shawn Michaels versus Ken Shamrock. Okay. Sort of a breath of fresh air from what we have been looking at.
It certainly is.
But again, a strange finish.
Yeah. Why wouldn't it be?
Yeah, you know what, you're right.
Yeah, it had to end in a DQ, didn't it? Because we haven't had many matches. We haven't had any DQs in this show.
Oh, yeah, you know what, you're right. There hasn't been one yet, so we had to get one now, right?